Chapter 4. They woke up. The cellar was shaking. Their ears rang. Debris was falling everywhere. The anti-aircraft battery behind the village was firing madly.
"Out of here!" shouted one of the recruits.
"Quiet! Don't strike a light!
Out of this rat trap!"
"Idiot! Where to?"
"Be quiet! Damn it, are you all still recruits?"
A dull crash shook the cellar. Something broke and fell in the darkness. There was a crackling and shattering sound of stones, plaster, and wood. Pale lightnings whipped through the opening in the cellar.
"Some have got buried back there!"
"Quiet! That was just part of the wall!"
"Out before they bury us here!"
Figures could be seen in front of the dim cellar entrance.
"Imbeciles!" someone swore. "Stay down here! You're safe from bomb fragments here!"
The others paid no attention. They did not trust the unreinforced cellar. They were right. Just as were those that stayed. It was a matter of luck. One could just as well be crushed as killed by fragments. They waited. Their stomachs were hollow and they breathed cautiously. They were waiting for the next hit. It must come close. But it did not. Instead, they heard several explosions that followed one another in quick succession and were much farther away.
"Damnation!"
someone shouted.
"Where are our pursuit planes?"
"Over England."
"Shut up!" Mukas shouted.
"Over Stalingrad,"
Immerman said.
"Shut up!"
The sound of motors came through in the pauses in the flak.
"There they are!"
Steinbrenner cried.
"Those are ours!"
Everyone listened. Machine gun fire trickled through the howling outside. Then came three explosions, one after the other. They were hits close behind the village. Pale light skimmed through the cellar, and in the same instant, nightmarish white and red and green rushed in. The earth rose and burst in a storm of thunder and lightning and darkness. As it ebbed away, there were screams from outside, and the grating sound of walls crashing together in the cellar. Graeber pawed his way out from under the plaster. The church, he thought, and felt as empty as though only his skin was left and everything else had been squeezed out of him. The entrance to the cellar was still there. It was grayly visible as his blinded eyes began to see again. He moved. He had not been injured.
"Damn it," Zauer said beside him. "That was close. I think the whole cellar behind us has been blown in."
They crawled over. The noise outside began again. In the midst of it, one could hear Mukka shouting commands. A flying stone had hit him in the forehead. Blood was running over his face, black in the flickering light.
"Come on, everyone! Dig them out! Who's missing?"
No one replied. The question was too silly. Graeber and Zauer were clearing debris and stones away. It was slow work. Iron supports and big chunks of stone got in their way. They could barely see. There were only the pale sky and the glare of the explosions. Graeber pushed the mortar aside and crept along the collapsed wall of the cellar. His face was close to the rubble and his hands kept feeling about. He listened intently, attempting to hear a cry or groan in the uproar, and at the same time he was groping through the ruins for human limbs. It was better this way than to dig at random. Time was vital when rubble fell. Suddenly he found a hand that moved.
"Here's someone!"
he shouted. He dug away, searching for the head. He could not find it and pulled at the hand.
"Where are you? Say something! Say where you are!"
he shouted.
"Here,"
the buried man whispered in a pause in the firing, almost beside his ear.
"Don't pull. I'm caught fast."
The hand moved again. Graeber tore the mortar to one side. He found the face. He felt the man's mouth.
"Over here!" he shouted. "Help me here!"
There was only room in the corner for a couple of men to dig. Graeber heard Steinbrenner's voice.
"Move over! Keep his face clear. We'll have to get at him from this side."
Graeber squeezed himself aside. The others were working quickly in the darkness.
"Who is it?" Zauer asked.
"I don't know. Who are you?"
The buried man said something. Graeber could not understand him. The others were working at his side. They pushed and pulled at the rubble.
"Is he still alive?"
Steinbrenner asked. Graeber ran his hand over the face. It did not move.
"I don't know," he said. "A couple of minutes ago he was still alive."
The noise began again. Graeber bent over the face in the rubble.
We'll have you out right away, he shouted. Do you understand me?
He thought he felt something like a breath on his cheek, but he was not sure. Above him, Steinbrenner, Zauer, and Schneider were panting.
He doesn't answer anymore.
We can't go on.
Zauer struck his spade in front of him on something that rang.
There are iron girders here, and the stones are too big. We need light and tools.
No light,
Mucha shouted.
Anyone who strikes a light will be shot.
They knew themselves it would be suicide to strike a light during the raid.
Idiotic ass, Schneider growled. We can't get anywhere. We must wait till we can see.
Yes.
Graber crouched against the wall. He was staring up at the heavens from which the din poured down like a torrent into the cellar. He could recognize nothing. He only heard death, invisible and raging. It was nothing unusual. He had waited often before like this, and it had been worse. Cautiously, he ran his hand over the unknown face. It was now free of dust and dirt. He felt the lips, then he felt the teeth. The open mouth closed. He felt the feeble bite on his fingers. The bite became stronger and relaxed.
He's still alive, Graber said. Tell him two men have gone out to find tools.
Graber brushed his fingers once more over the lips. They no longer moved. He searched for the hand in the rubble and held it tight. The hand, too, had ceased to respond. Graber held it tight. That was all he could do. He sat thus and waited until the attack was over. They brought tools and dug out the buried man. It was Lammers. He had been a tall, stringy fellow with eyeglasses. These two, they found. They were lying a yard beyond him on the floor and were unbroken. But Lammers was dead. Graber went on sentry duty with Schneider. The air was turbid and smelled of explosives. One side of the church had been blown in. The same thing had happened to the company commander's house. Graber wondered whether Raha was dead. Then he saw him standing, thin and tall, in the half-darkness behind the house. He was superintending the cleaning-up operations at the church. Some of the wounded had been buried. The rest lay outside. They lay on blankets and on strips of canvas on the ground. Their eyes were directed upward. Not for help. They were afraid of the heavens. Graber walked past the fresh bomb craters. They stank and looked as black in the snow as if they were bottomless. Fog was already collecting in them. There was a small one near the hill on which the graves had been dug.
We can use that one for a grave, Schneider said. We have enough dead for it.
Graber shook his head.
Where are you going to get the earth to fill it up with?
We can pry away from the sides.
That won't help. The grave will still be deeper than the ground around it. It's simpler to dig a new one.
Schneider scratched his red beard.
Do graves always have to be higher than the ground around them?
Probably not. We're just used to it.
They walked on together. Graber saw that the cross was missing from Rika's grave. The explosions had hurled it somewhere into the night. Schneider paused and listened.
There goes your furlough, he said.
They both listened. The front had suddenly come alive. Parachute flares and rockets hung on the horizon. The artillery fire was heavier and more regular. The banging of mines could be heard.
Drum fire, Schneider said. That means we'll be thrown into the line again. It's all up with your furlough.
Yes. They went on listening. Schneider was right. What they heard did not sound like a local attack. Heavy artillery preparation was going on along the whole unstable front. Early tomorrow, very likely, the general storm would break. Since nightfall, the weather had become foggy, and it was growing steadily more impenetrable. The Russians would advance behind the fog, as they had done 2 weeks before, when the company had lost 42 men. His furlough was done for. Graber had never really believed in it anyway. He had not even written his parents about it. He had only been home twice since he had been a soldier, and the last time seemed so long ago that it was already unreal. Nearly 2 years. 20 years. It was all the same. He did not even feel disappointed. Just empty. Which direction do you want to take? He asked Schneider.
I don't care. To the right?
Good. Then I'll go around to the left. The fog was settling in and became rapidly denser. It was like wading about in dark milk soup. It already reached to the neck and was billowing and seething coldly. Schneider's head swam away on its surface. Graber walked to the left in a wide circle around the village. Now and again he was submerged. Then he came up again and saw at the edge of the milky surface the colored lights of the front. The firing was getting steadily heavier. He did not know how long he had been walking when he heard a couple of single shots. Schneider, he thought, probably getting nervous. Then he heard renewed shooting and now shouts, too. He bent forward, sank into the protection of the fog, and waited, his rifle ready. The shouts came nearer. Someone called his name. He answered.
Where are you?
Here. He raised his head out of the fog for an instant, and at the same time leaped sidewise as a precaution. No one fired. He heard the voice now very close, but in the fog and the night it was hard to estimate distance. Then he saw Steinbrenner.
The swine! They got Schneider through the head!
It had been guerrillas. They had crawled up under cover of the fog. Schneider's red beard had apparently been an unmistakable target. No doubt they had expected to find the company asleep, and the work of clearing up had spoiled their plan. But they had got Schneider.
The bastards! We couldn't follow them in this damned soup!
Steinbrenner's face was wet with fog. His eyes sparkled.
We're to patrol in pairs now, he said. Orders from Raha, and not too far.
All right. They stayed close enough together to recognize each other. Steinbrenner peered sharply into the fog and glided cautiously forward. He was a good soldier.
I just wish we could grab one of them, he whispered. I'd know what to do with him here in the fog. Jam a rag into his mouth so no one could hear. Tie his arms and legs and then to work. You wouldn't believe how far you can pull an eye out before it tears.
He made a motion with his hand as if slowly squashing something. I believe it, Graber said.
Schneider, he thought. If he had gone to the left and I to the right, they'd have got me.
He felt no particular emotion. Similar things had often happened to him before. A soldier lived by accident. They went on searching until they were relieved, but they found no one. The firing from the front reverberated. The sewing machine rattle of the machine guns could be heard. The attack was beginning.
Here it comes, Steinbrenner said. If I were only up there, in an attack like this, lots of replacements are needed. In a couple of days, you might be a non-com.
Or squashed flat by a tank.
Oh, nonsense! That's what you old goats always think of right away. That's not the way to get ahead. Not everybody gets killed.
Certainly not. Otherwise, there'd be no war. They crawled into the cellar. Steinbrenner spread out his blanket and arranged himself on his bunk. Graber looked at him. This 20-year-old had killed more men than a dozen old soldiers together. Not in battle, behind the front and in concentration camps. He had boasted of it more than once and was proud of having been especially sharp. Graber lay down and tried to sleep. He couldn't. He listened to the rumbling on the front. Steinbrenner fell asleep right away. The day dawned, gray and wet. The front was in uproar. Tanks were in battle. Toward the south, the line was already pushed back. Airplanes droned. Transports were rolling across the plain. The wounded were coming back. The company was awaiting orders to move into the line. At 10 o'clock, Graber was summoned to report to Raha. The company commander had changed his quarters. He now lived in another corner of the stone house, which was still standing. Next to it was the company office. Raha's room was at ground level. The furniture consisted of a three-legged chair, a large broken oven on which lay a couple of blankets, a campaign cot, and a table. The windows had been mended with cardboard. The room was cold. On the table stood an alcohol burner with coffee.
Your furlough has come through, Raha said.
He poured the coffee into a brightly colored cup without a handle.
Granted. You're surprised, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
So am I. The form is in the office. Get it right away, and see that you leave immediately. Try to get one of the cars to take you along. I expect all leaves to be canceled any minute. If you're gone, you're gone. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Raha looked as though he was about to say something more. But then he reconsidered, came around the table, and shook hands with Graber.
All the best, and see that you get away from here. You're long overdue for leave. You've earned it.
He turned away and walked to the window. It was too low for him. He had to bend to look out. Graber turned and went around the house to the office. As he passed the window, he saw Raha's decorations. He could not see his face. The clerk pushed the stamped and signed form toward him.
Damn your luck, he said ill-temperedly. And not even married, eh?
No, but this is my first furlough in 2 years.
Luck, the clerk repeated. Furlough. When things are as hot as this.
I didn't pick the time.
Graber walked across to the cellar. He had stopped expecting the furlough, and so he had not packed. There wasn't much to pack. Quickly, he threw his things together. There was an enameled Russian icon among them that he intended to give his mother. He had found it somewhere along the way. When he looked up, Hirschland was standing in front of him. He held a piece of paper in his hand.
What? Graber asked and thought. Leave canceled. They've caught me at the last minute.
Hirschland glanced around. There was no one else in the cellar.
Are you going?
He whispered. Graber breathed again.
Yes,
he said.
Here is the address. Could you tell them at home that everything's fine with me?
Why? Can't you write them that yourself?
I do, Hirschland whispered. Always. But they don't believe me. My mother doesn't believe me. She thinks because...
He broke off and offered the scrap of paper to Graber.
Here's the address. If a member of my company comes, then perhaps she'll believe it. Do you understand? She thinks I wouldn't dare.
Yes, Graber said. I understand.
He took the paper and laid it in his paybook. Hirschland brought out a package of cigarettes.
Here, for your trip.
Why?
I don't smoke.
Graber looked up.
That was right. He had never seen Hirschland smoking.
Well, fine, he said, and took the package.
And don't say anything to them about...
Hirschland motioned toward the front. Just that we're resting.
Of course. What else would I say?
Good.
Thanks.
Hirschland left quickly.
Thanks, Graber thought. Why thanks?
He found a place in an ambulance car. The car, full of wounded, had slid into a ditch in the snow. The man beside the driver had been pitched out of his seat and had broken his arm. Graber was being taken along in his place. The car followed the road marked with stakes and wisps of straw, circling the village in a wide curve. Graber saw the company standing in formation in the town square in front of the church.
They have to move up to the front, the driver said. They're going into the line.
Man, where did the Russians get all that artillery?
Yes.
And they've got plenty of tanks, too. Where do they all come from?
From America or Siberia. They're supposed to have a lot of factories there.
The driver made his way around a truck that was stuck.
Russia's too big. Too big, I tell you. One just gets lost in it.
Graber nodded and drew a blanket around his boots.
For a minute, he seemed to himself like a deserter. The company was standing darkly on the village square, but he was driving back. He alone. The others were staying here, and he was driving back. They had to go to the front. I've earned it, he thought. Raha said so, too. So why do I think about it? Isn't it just that I'm still afraid someone will come after me and take me back?
A couple kilometers farther,
They found another car with wounded that had slipped off the road and was stuck in the snow. They stopped and checked over their stretchers. Two men had died. They unloaded them and in their place took on three wounded from the other car. Graber helped to load them. Two were amputees. The third had a face wound. He could sit up. Those left behind cursed and screamed. They were stretcher cases for whom there was no room. They felt the terror of all wounded men, to be overtaken by war at the last moment.
"What's the trouble?"
the driver asked the chauffeur of the car that was stuck.
"Broken axle."
"Broken axle? In the snow?"
"A man once broke his finger picking his nose. Hadn't you heard that, you novice?"
"Sure. At least you're lucky it's no longer winter. Otherwise, all of them would freeze to death."
They drove on. The driver leaned back.
"It happened to me 2 months ago. I was having trouble with the transmission, making very slow time. The fellows on the stretchers froze solid. Couldn't do a thing. Six were still alive when we finally arrived. Hands, feet, and noses frozen, of course. Getting wounded in the winter in Russia is no joke."
He got out a piece of tobacco and bit off a chew.
"And the ambulatory cases, they were all along the road on foot. At night in the cold, tried to storm our car. Hung on the doors and running boards like a swarm of bees. Had to kick them off."
Graber nodded absently and looked around him. The village had disappeared behind a snowbank. There was nothing left but the sky and the plain through which they were driving westward. It was midday. The sun shone dimly behind the gray. The snow glittered wanly. And suddenly something in him broke, hot and headlong, and for the first time he felt that he had escaped, that he was driving away from death. He felt it, and he stared at the track-marked snow disappearing yard after yard under the wheels, and yard after yard it was safety, safety toward the west, toward home, toward the incredible life beyond the rescuing horizon. The chauffeur jostled him while changing gears. Graber jumped. He felt in his pockets and brought out a package of cigarettes. They were the ones from Hirschland.
"Here,"
he said.
"Merci,"
the driver replied without looking.
"I don't smoke, only chew.